This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212 or on the web at radiocab.net. And by a grant from Portland's Gay and Lesbian Community Yellow Pages, providing a wide variety of gay-friendly business listings. For more information, call 503-230-7701 or go to the net at pdxgayyellowpages.com. It's Tuesday night.
Hate Crime is a suspense thriller having to do with religious intolerance.
Well, I ran into our new neighbor. Apparently he's got a problem with the gays.
Hallelujah. If ever there was a time to tell me, if ever there was a time to touch me too long, if ever there was a time to be a time, my time is gone.
How many people, how many
welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Beatings and arrests turn Moscow Pride into mayhem, a neighborhood crime shatters the silver screen, and two soloists and voices for a cause inspire the audiophile. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Charles Hall.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 27, 2006. According to initial reports from Moscow, that city's first ever pride parade has ended prematurely with violence and mass arrests. About 200 people were reportedly detained by police at the May 27th event, including Nikolai Alexeyev, one of the primary organizers of the march. The parade was planned for that date because it's the 13th anniversary of the repeal in Russia of Soviet-era laws against consensual homosexual sex. A police spokesperson said that about 120 of those arrested were Pride March participants, while the others were part of a counter-demonstration by skinheads, members of the Russian Orthodox Church, and a far-right political group who had formed to confront the marchers, shouting, "Moscow is not Sodom." "This is a pervert's parade," one counter-protester, a woman who gave only her first name, Irina, told the Associated Press. "This is filth which is forbidden by God. We have to cleanse the world of this filth." Canadian TV journalist Ellen Pinchuk reported that it did appear that police were more interested in arresting members of the gay and lesbian community than those who had come there to beat them up. So that was closely watched by international observers here from human rights groups and members of the European Parliament. Authorities reported that most of those arrested have already been released. More than 1,000 police officers were put on full alert after organizers vowed to march despite the absence of an official city permit to do so.
Pride marchers had planned to lay flowers at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, a symbol of the World War II struggle against fascism and one of Russia's most sacred places, but police closed the gates to the park and began making arrests. Peter Tatchell of the British rights group Outrage told Reuters that, "We came here to lay flowers at this anti-fascist memorial. Today is a great shame for Russia because a peaceful protest has been suppressed." Volker Beck, a Green member of Germany's Bundestag, was also among the openly queer notables from outside the country to march in a show of international solidarity. He was giving a TV interview when about 20 nationalist youth surrounded and beat him, bloodying his nose. Volker Eichler, a gay activist from Berlin who witnessed the attack, told the Associated Press that police not only failed to intervene on Beck's behalf, but eventually arrested him. According to a BBC report, several other foreign queer rights activists were also beaten by protesters.
As an unprecedented pride-related conference on May 25th kicked off the weekend in Moscow, members of an extreme nationalist group disrupted a speech by the grandson of Oscar Wilde. About 20 skinheads burst into the library hall where Merlin Holland was speaking, shouting nationalist slogans and throwing eggs at him, then spraying the room with an unidentified gas. The hall was quickly evacuated, and there were no reported injuries. A Moscow court late this week upheld Mayor Yuri Lushkov's official denial of a parade permit. The day before the parade, Lushkov told Russian radio, "I believe that such a parade is inadmissible in our country, above all for moral considerations. People should not make public their deviations." One group of LGBT activists had issued a statement before the parade calling it untimely, dangerous, and provocative. Ivan Timchenko, manager of the Three Monkeys, Moscow's most popular gay club, told the London Times that he and most of his friends were opposed to the public pride celebration. "It is too early for Russia," he said. "We need to start breaking down barriers at home first. If we can't talk about this at home, how can we shout about it on the streets?"
According to a story this week in the Washington Blade, the U.S. State Department is finally acknowledging anti-queer violence in Iraq, saying that the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad is willing to meet with non-governmental LGBT groups to address what activists have described as an increasingly calamitous situation. Numerous reports over the past several weeks have documented a wave of vigilante-style kidnappings and murders of anyone perceived to be gay, lesbian, or transgendered in Iraq by Shiite Islamic fundamentalist death squads. An April 20th letter sent by the U.S.-based International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice urged her to condemn the rash of killings and to ask that U.S. military and civilian personnel in Iraq call these abuses to the attention of Iraqi authorities. L. Victor Hurtado, acting director of the State Department's Office of Iraq Affairs, claimed in a May 11th reply that the U.S. is working with the Iraqi government to promote the protection of human rights. "We are very troubled by these reported incidents of threats, violence, executions, and other violations of humanitarian law against members of the gay and lesbian community in Iraq," he said. Lieutenant Colonel Barry Venable, a spokesman for the U.S. Department of Defense, said last week that other Iraqi groups are being targeted for assassinations and kidnappings, including college professors, doctors, and owners of liquor stores. "We try to stop killings and assassinations regardless of the motive," Venable said. The Bush administration, while earlier this year condemning Islamic clerics for threatening to execute a man in Afghanistan for converting to Christianity, had until now remained silent over the anti-LGBT killings in Iraq.
Education and theology clashed in Scotland this week, with the demise 6 years ago of the noxious law banning the promotion of homosexuality in schools. The country's sex education curriculum is finally being amended to include discussions of homosexual sex and relationships, a move Scotland's Catholic Church has vehemently condemned. "To quite graphically equip children with information about same-sex relationships is appalling, outrageous, and utterly unnecessary," said a spokesperson for the church. "Where was it decreed that every aspect of human sexuality has to be addressed in the school curriculum?" The instructional guidelines, part of the Sexual Health and Relationships Education Project, leave it up to individual teachers whether or to what extent they want to discuss issues such as protection from sexually transmitted diseases for lesbians and gay men, how to access sexual health services, and how to handle same-gender crushes. A spokesperson for the Scottish Executive said that no new guidance to schools is being issued. What NHS Health Scotland is doing is offering training to schools, should they wish it, on a range of diversity and equality issues.
Meanwhile, the Church of Scotland, the country's national church, is supporting adoptions by same-gender couples, but with specific restrictions. The mixture of laypeople, consultants, and academics at the church's General Assembly this week said that there should be a strict selection process to ensure couples are in an enduring, stable, and strong relationship. The church supports adoptions access for same-gender couples as long as new legislation doesn't define adoption as a right. Individual gays and lesbians can already adopt in Scotland, but their partners have no legal rights. A new law, expected to come into force next year, will grant same-gender couples equal parental rights.
The General Assembly also acknowledged that the advent of civil partnerships has led to increasing requests by same-gender couples for a Church of Scotland religious ceremony. The Assembly narrowly decided that the blessings of civil partnerships would be a matter of conscience for local ministers, that no minister would be disciplined for conducting such blessings, but that none would be forced to do so. The close vote requires that each presbytery be consulted and that the issue be raised again at next year's annual meeting.
Australian Prime Minister John Howard has come under fire by several of the country's queer advocacy groups for telling students during a speech in Ireland at Dublin University that denying marriage or civil unions to same-gender couples is not discrimination. Responding to a student's question on the issue, he said, "I think it is a form of minority fundamentalism to say that you have to, in every aspect of one's institutions and one's arrangements in society, have a technical equivalence." The gay and lesbian rights lobby called the Prime Minister's reference to equality advocates as minority fundamentalists offensive, and the Australian Coalition for Equality labeled it insulting. A recent poll showed that a majority of Australians favor legal recognition for same-gender couples, and more members of Parliament are calling for some form of civil partnership law. Queensland MPs Warren Inch and Peter Lindsay have each called on the Howard government to introduce such legislation. "There's actually a lot of support building in the Parliament," said Lindsay, "and from people that you wouldn't think would be supporting this."
And finally, every now and then we like to share the latest report about homosexuality as a natural variant in the animal kingdom. In the news this week, both a gay and lesbian pair of storks at the Dutch Zoo in Overloon have adopted and raised a number of chicks. A lesbian stork couple was given two eggs to sit on, while a gay male pair was given one egg to nurture. Zoo staff were unsure if the queer storks would have a natural urge to raise offspring, but were happily surprised to discover that the birds embraced parenthood. Animals usually express homosexual behavior in mating rituals, but the storks in Overloon are tenderly caring for and feeding their adopted chicks. Zoo spokesperson Esther Jansen said, "The gay storks look after the eggs and the chicks just as well as our heterosexual birds. A notion we can't resist saying that's bound to ruffle the feathers of some homophobes."
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 27, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Charles Hall.
You'll hear performers who will make you believe the world can be on the verge of peace from the porch if only one would try. Fresh from the audio file later in the program. City by city across the U.S., a gay writer-director is distributing his own independent movie. The journey of Hate Crime to the screen was no less remarkable a trip, as This Way Out's Steve Pride found out from first-time filmmaker Tommy Stovall.
Tommy Stovall's new feature, Hate Crime, is the story of a longtime gay couple planning a commitment ceremony when a bigoted Christian zealot moves in next door. As the title suggests, the couple's happiness is shattered by a violent crime. But who done it? The new neighbor is an obvious suspect, but the truth may be a bit more complicated. The film is a thought-provoking suspense drama. It is also a testament to the power of love and the damaging consequences of intolerance.
I'm Tommy Stovall, the writer-director of Hate Crime. It's what happens when the son of a fundamentalist preacher moves in next door to a gay couple.
Hey, so what was bothering you before?
Well, I ran into our new neighbor. Apparently he's got a problem with the gays.
Yeah? At least we can forget the housewarming gift.
I set out to make a movie that's engaging and try to make it about this serious subject and hopefully get people to think. Hopefully they'll learn something and question their values and beliefs.
Hi. I'm Chris.
Hi. I know who you are. I know all about you. What do you want?
I was just bringing by something from
what
a church.
What got there?
It's from my church.
You a church pusher?
No, ma'am. I
already go to church. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged, thou hypocrite.
People ask me if the story's based on anything autobiographical, and it's not, thank goodness. A lot of the characters are based on, you know, myself or people I know. It's easier to write what you know. My partner's an accountant, so the main character's an accountant. My stepfather was a veterinarian, so I grew up in a vet clinic in Central Texas. So the other gay character is a veterinarian. It's a lot easier to write what you know.
By the time a filmmaker makes that first feature, their bio usually contains either short films or other features they've worked on. But Tommy Stovall took a slightly different route.
I started out in video production in college, and my goal was always to make an independent film. I knew all the technical stuff as far as production goes because I used to do pretty much everything myself. I never set out to write a screenplay, but I finally figured out that I had to write something if I was going to direct something and make something. You know, I thought about, you know, well, I need to go direct a short film first because that's the way it's typically done. And I just said, you know what, I don't want to go do a short film. I want to do this movie. So we just raised the money and we hired people who knew what they were doing. And I was extremely nervous because I'd never been on a film set. I'd never been on any actual crew or anything like that.
While Hate Crime features a strong performance by Bruce Davidson as a homophobic preacher, Stovall is careful not to stereotype all religion as intolerant. In fact, in one scene, he literally gives you both sides of the issue.
We call that scene the dueling sermons. That scene gets the most comments from audience members, which really makes me happy because when you boil it down, that's really what the movie's kind of about. You know, it's easy to write a character, you know, like the fundamentalist preacher, to make everything black and white, clear-cut villain and, you know, hero and whatever. But it was really important to me that if you're going to show this side of religion and the hatred that comes from religion, it was also important to show the other side of it because I've always been fascinated by how many different takes there are on the same religion, you know, how many different denominations and beliefs and basically people justifying their own beliefs with the Bible or whatever the religion is. And I wanted to show that contrast. Here's the preacher that preaches fire and brimstone and the preacher that preaches love and acceptance.
And God has declared through many scriptures that he will punish the unrepentant sinner. And they should be cast down into the fires of hell because they not only hate God, they shame him and they do not fear him.
God is love. And religion is the law of love. When a soul becomes filled with the love of God, with a desire for all that is good, it's become possessed of a new hold on existence.
There are dark clouds of God's wrath hanging directly over your heads, full of the dreadful storm and the screaming of thunder, and were it not for God's restraining hand, it would immediately burst forth upon you. You are in God's hands, and it is uncertain what he will do with you.
The film also stars Seth Peterson, best known for his 4 years as Robbie Hansen on the TV show Providence, as a gay man determined to avenge the hate crime perpetrated against his partner. Peterson says he was drawn to the role by the complexity of the character.
Here's a guy who's in love with some amazing human being that has been ripped away from him, and I try to put a lot of the focus on his needs and his feelings, and you know, the fact that he was gay was just a side note to the character. One of the other things about the character that I love is that he's so controlled. He's a tax attorney. He's got everything set, you know. Everything is already in place. He's really kind of neurotic in the sense that everything is in its place and should be there for a reason, and then everything just rips out right from under him. He's got a lot of faith in the system initially, and when that seems to waver and it's obvious to him that the system really doesn't care about him or his problems, that's pretty much when it steps over the line.
Hate Crime is not always an easy film to watch. Bad things happen to good people. But it is an excellent film. And writer-director Tommy Stovall has a bright future ahead of him. This has been a conversation with the writer-director of Hate Crime, Tommy Stovall, and actor Seth Peterson. For more information about the film, visit their website at hatecrimemovie.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
So confused, they jerked me through this field of temptation.
Bye.
Transamerica to Capote to Brokeback Mountain and several significant others, 2005 was a banner year for queer content movies. With copious clips and comments by the filmmakers themselves, you can own Steve Pride's special half-hour review. Log on to thiswayout.org for all the details.
I'm Dibbley-Dee, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well. Join Greg and Lucia each week for This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine right here on this station.
Two lesbian artists at the top of their games release solo CDs and join with some compatriots in service to their communities. They sing all about it in this month's Audiophile.
If there's one thing I should have known by now, your hate has grown. If there are two things I could have seen, one would be you, the other me. In all our glory, in all our glory, beautiful, tragic life. Oh,
starting us off this month is the beautiful song Alleluia by Australian artist Martine Locke. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. For a number of years, Martine was in the popular act The Velvet Janes. This is her third solo album called On the Verge.
On the Verge is 10 tracks, and I would like to think that it's probably the most honest work I have done to date. Because every single song on that album, and without sounding hokey, every one of those songs is a reflection of part of who I am.
You're gonna find me, the Greyhound bus, somewhere on the outskirts of town. Climbing board, destination unknown, find some peace, somewhere to be alone. Cause the hustle of this three-bridge town is driving me to despair. Nothing that can save me but my soul, gotta leave before it gets too old.
Find out more about On the Verge by Martine Locke at www.martinelocke.com. That's www.martinelocke.com.
The third album by Natalia Zuckerman is called Only One. It showcases her masterful guitar work, and it's very much a solo project.
Winter comes up like a toothache, and find this upside. Light pours in the farm, fresh eggs on the sunny side. I cracked one open to yolk spilled out, and then I left it right there, cause I thought it must be a bad. It must be about you.
Well, it's a live in-studio solo record, and it's real raw and really intimate. And the songs are brand new ones, and then a few that I've been playing for a couple of years and just didn't have a chance to record yet. And I wanted to do something that really captured what I do live, and I think it does that really well.
Never was a time to tell me. If ever there was a time to touch me too long, if ever there was a time to be our time, my time is gone. Cause you can't say that you can't swim, then turn around and jump on in. Come on in, the water's fine, why are you crying?
You can learn more about the album Only One at www.nataliazuckerman.com. That's www.nataliazuckerman.com.
We don't often feature various artists' albums, but this one is noteworthy for its cause and the artists involved, including two you've just heard, Martine Locke and Natalia Zuckerman.
Other artists like Tret Fury, Wishing Chair, Shake Russell, Julie Lloyd, Patrice Pike, and many more felt strongly enough that they contributed their songs. And after hearing a little more from Tret Fury, singer and producer Christy Claxton tells us about the project.
How many people, how many lives, how many times humanity dies? Where lies compassion? Where lies love? We run in fear as the hawk devours the dove.
The Peace on the Porch Project's mission is supporting independent musicians who promote peace on the home front. And with Peace on the Porch Volume 2, we're raising money for agencies who support victims of domestic violence. And although this is not a GLBT issue per se, many GLBT artists donated, and I think that speaks volumes about their commitment to the communities that they live in.
Something that I never said, a story that I've never shared. I was only 20 years old, he was a love affair. Soon became a humble home, wrecked with animosity. Took it to the bottle, and then turned around and took it out on me. And I was just a boy, a scrawny little boy. Faggot little boy, too confused by love to leave, too abused by you to see that you were maniacal, certifiable. It's comical when I'm looking back, I see you've made a man out of me.
And that artist, Levi Christ, was glad to contribute his song about domestic abuse to this project. Find out more about the album, Peace from the Porch, Volume 2, at www.christyclaxton.com. That's www.christyclaxton.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
It's a melodious half-hour collection of our audiophile producers' picks for the best queer-created music of 2005. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can own the Audiophile 2005 Year in Review. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, John Beaupre, Charles Hall, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. You heard music by Ebony Tay and members of the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles from the soundtrack of Hate Crime, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Log on to our website to see how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and choose from some special LGBT history, music, and culture CDs as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on CKLU, Sudbury, Ontario, 3OCR, Colac, Victoria, Fresh FM, Nelson, Marlborough, New Zealand, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station.